This is HPR episode 2743 entitled, Chuck to Build in the D20 System, and is part of the series, Information Underground. It is hosted by Klaatu, and is about 66 minutes long, and carries a clean flag. The summary is, Klaatu and Lost in Bronx build an RPG character in the D20 system of Starfinder.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hey everybody, this is Klaatu, and with me is...
Hi, this is Lost in Bronx.
And we are going to walk through character creation of an RPG character. The idea is to convey the generic process of building an RPG character, but of course every game is unique. And so it just so happens that the rule system we're going to be using is Starfinder, based on... I would say Starfinder actually is pretty loosely based on D&D 3.5. It has strayed quite a bit from I think what traditionally we would think of as Dungeons and Dragons 3.5. That's the general concept, and I think that by hearing us do this, it might help other people who've never built a character figure it out. So the first place that we're starting is page 14 on the Starfinder rulebook, and it depends on what rulebook you're using, obviously, as to what page your character creation guide starts. I think the D&D 5th edition is page 11 or something like that, so it's usually pretty close to the beginning. And we'll start at step one. So Lost in Bronx, have you considered what your... The Starfinder says to consider your character concept, which I feel in old school D&D, you actually rolled first and then came up with your concept after you saw what you had. But in this, they're trying to say, come up with a concept first and then build your character based on that. Do you have a rough idea of what you want to build?
First off, you're not kidding when you say that this is loosely based on D&D. I mean, you can see the antecedents. You can definitely see that this is a descendant game. But yeah, a character concept is something that was essentially the last step you came up with, or it was one that you formed as you went along. And because so much of the original way you did it was based on chance, because you were always rolling dice for your stats, and then you had to decide how... You know, depending on how strict the die rolling that the GM imposed, what the rules that the GM imposed, how strict they were, you may or may not have had the choice of character class that you wanted, let alone the type of character. So this is very different. But if I had to choose something for this game, because it is a science fiction game, a space opera game, I would like to create a pilot. Or something like a pilot, and probably human, because it's my first character in this game, and I want to hit the ground running. I don't want to have to negotiate different racial characteristics just yet.
Sure, that sounds good. So in the book, step one is to create a character concept, which is nice, and I feel like it's a little bit backwards, because I think what we are generally used to, as I guess in old school D&D, is to actually roll your ability scores first. And in fact, I'm going to propose to you, Lost in Bronx, that we do indeed do that first, that we roll your ability scores first, because those are the base level. That's what everything else is going to build on. Would you agree?
I would agree. I mean, first off, it's what I'm used to. But secondly, just by the way the rules and the rule book itself is laid out, there's an awful lot of reference to your ability scores and adding bonuses when you don't even have any ability scores yet. And it does seem to be a little cart before the horse in that regard. So yeah, why don't we do that?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, you're using pen and paper too. I mean,
yes,
which
yes,
is the traditional method. I think a lot of modern players are probably going to be using like apps on their cell phones and things like that. So maybe that was part of the expectation, but they give us two or three options to do ability scores. You can either take a prefab sort of like law of averages array of numbers, or you can actually roll die. I can't imagine what you're going to choose here, but what would you like to do?
I think I'd like to roll some dice. I mean, why not?
What a shocker.
I know.
Yeah. I mean, it's an RPG. Why not?
It is. It is. And I like to leave at least some of this up to chance. So, okay. So let's, I am using a dice rolling application on a electronic device I have, because I don't actually own a set of dice anymore. I used to have plenty. I don't anymore. So I'm going to, first off, number of sides, which would be 6, and number of dice, which would be 3. I assume, or do we want to do 4 and drop the biggest? I can't do that with this.
I've always done 4 and dropped the largest. But I mean, if you want to play at 3 and just take what you get, I'm fine with that. Sounds
That's
fun.
How I used to play. I used to play, you roll 3 6-sided dice for each stat in a row and then decide what you can make with them.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
how I always played. Now, this entire system is not designed to run it that way, and I'm not sure I'd be able to do that. So all I'm going to do is get the numbers, and then I'll decide where I'm going to put them. I wouldn't normally do that, but I will for this particular system, because it does seem to expect you to completely handcraft the character as opposed to letting chance create the character. So first roll, 6. I have a 7. It's not great, but better. I have a 13. That's kind of nice. I have a 7 again. Another 13. How about that? 2, 3, 4, 5. One more roll. I have a 14. That's my high.
So you've got an array of 5 numbers, correct? Sorry, 6 numbers. 6 numbers.
I have an array of 6 numbers. Yeah.
Do you want to assign those now, or do you want to start out and figure out like what would be smart? Do you have a... I guess this is where the character concept comes in. We'll just kind of really quickly peek at what the pilot and human do. And it looks like, just kind of reading it over, it looks like probably, and you could probably have guessed this, dexterity is probably going to be your key ability, like the one that you really want to invest in. So like that 14 is probably what you would want to put there.
Yeah, I would think so. All right. All right. Score there, 14. Okay. And I did say human, and humans get a bonus as well, I believe.
Yeah, they're versatile, they're human.
Just because they're human.
This is actually step 2, is choose a race, so we might as well do that. And it looks like on this particular rule book, the humans are on page, 45. And yeah, it looks like they get a +2 to any one ability. So that's pretty good. You can put that in something.
And if we're talking about dexterity being important, why not put it there?
Cool.
So we'll do +2 there. All right, so that was my 14. Let's see. Be nice to take care of myself in a fight, so we're going to put a 13 there. And maybe a 13 in constitution.
Probably smart.
Oh, that'll no. I think intelligence, or maybe wisdom.
I don't think you're going to need wisdom all that much as a human pilot.
Maybe not, but it helps when it comes to saving throws.
That is true.
I think I'm going to put my 13 there for that reason. This is kind of your min-maxing type of mentality going on here. And I generally used to laugh at people that would do that, but there's sometimes some real statistical advantages to it. So,
oh yeah.
Let's see. Constitution, we'll put a 7 there, and we'll put a 7 in intelligence and our lowest number in charisma, as it should be. So there we are.
Okay. What is that, a 6 in charisma? Is that what that is?
6 in charisma. Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Missing teeth, I assume.
By my reckoning, you have 13 in strength, which is a yes. +1 modifier, because everything's okay. Based on 2 numbers above 10. So you've got 1 modifier there. 14 okay. In dex for a 2 modifier.
Okay.
7 in constitution for a -2 modifier. You're going to want to fix that probably. 7 in intelligence for a -2. Wisdom 13 for a 1 modifier. And a charisma okay. And 6 for a -2 modifier.
Okay.
And those modifiers, of course, I know you know this, but we're going to say it for the audience, is what you're going to add when you roll a die, again, based on those abilities. You'll add that modifier to your roll, or subtract in the case of the negative numbers.
So, and by rolling against a statistic, we would roll a die and hope to match or exceed, I believe, the number.
No, you're thinking of old school D&D.
Okay.
Well, they got rid of that in third edition. So you'll be rolling against something. Trying to think of an example. You're trying to impress someone. You'll roll die, and then you will, to whatever you rolled, let's say you roll a 12, you would add your modifier to that. So that would be a -2 for your charisma. So now you've just rolled a 10 effectively. And your success is based on the DC of whatever you are trying to achieve.
The DC, okay. And the DC is difficulty challenge, is it?
I forget. DC, it's just difficulty class? Difficulty something, yeah.
Difficulty. We'll call it just difficulty.
Yeah.
For the time being. Okay, so that, and that score is based on the difficulty of that particular challenge. And it might be determined by someone else's score, maybe their intelligence or something like that. The general difficulty of the situation as determined by the game master. So or the scenario. Okay, just trying to keep it clear. All right, so I have my ability scores and I have my modifiers.
Chosen your race. Did we get everything under the human? Did we get everything? Oh, well, you know what you ought to do is go ahead and jot down that you have 4 HP for your human.
Okay.
There'll be more later, but you should at least jot down the 4 that you get.
Okay, I have 4 HP. Also, humans get +1 to their ability score. I had a dex of 14. I wanted to put my +1 into dex to make it a 15, but that would go under modifiers.
Actually, it's a +2, actually.
I thought it was, is it a +2 for being human?
Yeah, it says +2 to any one ability.
So that's my +2 that I have under dex, or is that +2 modifier due to it being a 14?
That's the 2 there is because it is a 14. So you're going to want to bump that 14 up to 16.
To 16,
and,
okay.
Yeah, and then make that modifier a 3.
Okay, that's pretty good. I mean, I have some negatives, but That's a nice score. I don't mind that. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great, +3 to any roll that you do on dex. I mean, that's going to really, really make piloting, that's going to make you a capable pilot for sure.
Yeah, I would think so. I would hope so. I think my scores are set now.
And then we should also remember that you're going to get, when it comes around to choosing these, you're going to get a bonus feat at first level, and you are also going to choose one more skill rank. Those are in the future, so we'll just have to kind of remember that those are benefits that you get.
Made a note of that.
As have I, so neither of us will forget to do that at the end. Okay. So the third step, according to the rule book, is to choose a theme. And themes are, I think of them a little bit like, they're not exactly, they're a little bit like kits in the old D&D stuff. I forget what edition that was. I feel like it was second edition, where they kind of had preset skill sets that you could choose. And if you look on page 15 of your rule book, you'll see a summary of all the different themes. And one of them is Ace Pilot, but there are others that you could look at if you want.
No, I think we want Ace Pilot for sure. You know, I mean,
it makes sense.
That's kind of, I'm after a pilot. Let's go with Ace Pilot. So my theme will be Ace Pilot. I like that. That's what I'm after.
So Ace Pilot, it says it's on page 29, and this should just tell us some benefits that you get. Well, it looks like you get one +1 to a dex for being an Ace Pilot.
Okay, now we're up to 17. Okay, so does this 17 change my modifier?
It does not, because modifiers only change every other boost. But it does say that you have...
All right.
That one of the benefits of being an Ace Pilot is that any DC on culture checks in relation to starships and vehicles and things like that, you get to treat as if though they were 5 less than they actually are. So if you're rolling against a culture check, then whatever the GM says the DC is, then you need to remind the GM, hey, take 5 off of that because I just have a lot more knowledge about these things.
Okay. And would that go under abilities or skills or where?
Strangely, there's not really a place for that.
I'll mark it under skills since culture is a skill.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
Piloting is a class skill for you.
So that just means that on the character sheet, just to the... to the left of each, to the big list of all the skills that you could possibly have, you should put a little tick mark or fill in a box or whatever you're looking at to denote that piloting is something that, basically, I think of it as you have training in it. That's kind of how I feel about that. And what that means mechanically is that whenever you roll on piloting, because it is a class skill, as long as you take at least one rank in this skill, you'll get a +3 bonus to whatever you roll.
Okay.
Which, I mean, that's insane because you've got dexterity +3 and you've got piloting +3, +6 on your rolls. I think you're going to be a pretty solid pilot.
Yeah, that's, at least when it comes to dice.
Yeah.
see if I make the right choices when it comes to gaming.
Yeah, that's a different story. Cool. So I think that's your theme. That's my theme. All right. Next up, choose a class. Now, it's kind of weird because you might think, well, piloting is my class, but actually piloting is more like, I guess it's sort of a specialization, whereas your class is, I would say maybe it's more like your job. Would you agree with that sort of summary?
I'll go with that summary because I don't see a point to having those two things separated myself.
Yeah.
Let's go with your explanation. I like it.
Cool. Sounds good. So classes, they're again summarized on page 15, just under the themes in the big blue box.
Mm-hmm.
Envoy, mechanic, mystic, operative, Solarian, soldier, and technomancer. Any of those appeal to you?
Yes, I think I will go with mechanic. If I'm going to fly a ship, I want to be able to fix it too.
That's actually a really good, that's a good policy. So we'll switch over to page 68 on the rule book and look at the mechanic class. Right at the top of the page there, you get 6 stamina points plus your constitution modifier.
Okay.
That's bad news for you because your constitution modifier is a -2. So you get 4.
Okay.
You get 4 stamina points.
Okay, so I have 4 stamina points. That's not bad. Well, it could be better, but it's not bad.
Yeah. Well, good news is you also get 6 extra hit points, and you already had 4 for being human. So now you've got a 10 total hit points.
Oh, that's not bad. That is not bad.
So that's not bad. Yeah.
Old school D&D, you had to... Old school D&D, you had to be a fighter, and you had to... You had to roll high, and you had to have a good constitution to get... 10 hit points at first level.
So the difference between stamina points and hit points too is that stamina points, they're a little bit more resilient because they act just like hit points. When people hit you lose a stamina point, but those are refreshed really fairly easily. They you just take a 10-minute rest and you get your stamina points back, whereas hit points takes a much longer time to restore. So that's kind of the advantage to stamina.
The way I...
Mechanically.
Yeah. The way I kind of interpreted it, reading the rules, is you get into a fight and someone punches you in the face and it stuns you and you take a little damage from that, but you shake it off in, just a minute or two and you're up and running again. Whereas the normal hit points do not come back that fast,
Yeah, exactly.
And so it's a way of, I guess, of expressing stun in a way. And it's a pretty good idea because you could easily die from getting punched in the face in the old game, which seemed a little extreme. So,
well, I think you were saying in an episode, I forget where I heard you say it, but I know I heard a recording of you saying this, but in RPG and science fiction especially, like, it's really kind of hard to approximate sort of realistic battles and so on because it's just like science fiction, I feel, is a little bit more realistic to most of us than fantasy, because fantasy is such a long time ago and there's so much magic in it. Science fiction, you kind of almost want more realism. So I think the stamina thing is kind of nice because, as you say, I don't think I would buy getting killed just by being hit in the face possibly as much as I buy just being able to shake that off.
Well, I mean, if you wanted to be absolutely realistic when it came to tremendous amounts of damage, like, say, firearm damage, no stamina points at all. You just get shot and you die because that's really how it happens.
And you're dead,
But that's not a fun game.
That's still a problem. Yeah,
that is not a fun
game. Yeah, exactly.
So, we used to do that. Occasionally, our game master would bring in firearms, from time travel and whatever. And, the people dropped like flies. I mean, it was just the body count was very high. So
That's a very different feel. Let's see. So your key ability score, it tells you, is your dexterity. I think we already knew that.
Is there a minimum on your key ability scores? I wanted to be a pilot, but I only had a 6 in that. Like, I for whatever reason, I had stuck my 6 in there.
No, and I think that is probably why they were probably thinking, let's save the ability score for last, because they want you to know going in what to put your best ability into. You know? So if you've chosen to be a mechanic pilot, then they're telling you now, hey, you should have a high dexterity. So maybe that's why in their according to their logic, ability made more sense at the end of the scenario.
Well, you know, actually, from that standpoint, that does make a lot more sense. To what doesn't make sense is asking you to add all these bonuses in when you don't have any place to put them.
Things that don't exist.
That,
yeah,
I had a little trouble with, but I mean, yeah, I mean, logically speaking, that does make sense. If they're telling you at this point, well, if you want to be a mechanic, you really do want high dex, then be like, oh, okay, well, that's the one that I'll put everything into.
Yeah.
I guess it's valid. It's just very alien to me.
Yeah.
I guess it's valid.
And I guess we could have just written down the numbers that they were telling us to write into blank slots and then add 10 to each or and then roll for the abilities and put that in there or something.
That's so true.
I guess we could have done it differently.
Yeah, it's true. And maybe the fact that I keep thinking in terms of I got to roll my dice, you know, I have to roll for my stats alters the entire production in my head. You know, the fact that I'm going to have these numbers and I have to know what they are before I can start adding bonuses to them. But maybe if you aren't rolling anything at all, it doesn't really matter. And you can just put you can put a one, a two, a three, whatever the bonus for dex might be. And then, oh, I'm adding 10 to that. Okay, I'll just add 10 to that now. So, okay. I take back every rotten thing I said about the way this is laid out.
Okay, so let's do your skills now. So there are things called skill ranks in Pathfinder and Starfinder, and that is when you invest a point in a number of skills. Now, there is a limit to how many ranks you can have in a skill based on your level. So if you're at first level, you can only put one rank in each skill. When you're level two, then you can add another rank in there and so on. That's why the fact that you have certain skills that are class skills is significant, because those get a free +3 regardless of your level.
How many of these points do I get to choose for skills?
You get 4 plus your intelligence modifier. Okay. And what is your intelligence modifier, Austin Bronx?
Let's see. We are here. My intelligence is -2.
So you get 2.
I get 2
skills.
Okay. Yep. Well, I think one will be piloting.
That is a wise choice.
All right, so I already get +3 for, because it's a class skill, because my class.
Correct.
My class.
Oh, actually, you know what, though? No, actually, you have to have a rank in it in order to qualify for +3.
Okay, well, I'm putting a rank into it now. I assume I can only do one per skill, right? One rank per skill. Is that what you
Correct.
Said? Okay. So I have a rank of 1, so I also, so I get a +3 on that when it comes to, rolling for difficult, you know, against a DC or whatever. Is that what we're... Am I understanding that correctly?
Yep.
Okay. Do I get a bonus simply for having a rank in it? Do I get another bonus point for that?
Yes. Well, you know what? They're not super clear about that. I have always played it to be yes.
Okay.
If you have one rank, then you have one rank in it. And then if it's a class skill, you happen to have another +3. So that, to me, is a total of 4.
Okay.
Now, the better news is, of course, that skills are dependent on your abilities.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're rolling against piloting, you're not just rolling. You're actually going to have effectively your plus, what did we say, 4 for this.
Yes.
Plus your +3 for being an attribute that you have dex. So you're going to have a +7 on your skill rolls.
Okay. All right. Well, it's worth it, I would think, especially when I have...
Savvy.
Severe minuses in other areas. So, and I would think, let's see, minuses.
If you want to excel at something, I would almost maybe consider putting in a rank into the wisdom-based profession, because you've got a good wisdom modifier, you know, so you're not like throwing this out, you know, with a minus something or another. My one question is, what's the profession? I'm not exactly sure what that's gonna, I'm trying to look up real quick here.
Yeah. Yeah, I was a little confused by that too.
Because if it's 146, I think maybe if it's like mechanic related stuff, then that might actually be useful. Profession: you are skilled in a specific job or creative art. You know how to use the tools of your trade. Profession is actually a number of separate skills. You could have blah blah blah. When you put a rank in profession skill, you must choose the ability score keyed to that skill, charisma, intelligence, or wisdom. Common wisdom-based profession skills include bounty hunter, cook, counselor, dock worker, farmer, gambler, general, contractor, herbalist, maintenance worker, maintenance worker could be good. Manager, mercenary, yeah. Merchant, miner, and smuggler.
Yeah, it does say it shouldn't overlap with your existing skills. And maintenance worker doesn't directly. Although that's up to you. It says you're the final arbiter, so it's up to
you.
No,
I would say that was fine.
All right, so why don't we do that? We'll take profession. We'll make it... I have to choose which number... Or which, I'm sorry, which attribute I am going to put into, which seems really weird, right? You wouldn't think that, I don't know, a mercenary. Charisma, intelligence, or wisdom to be a mercenary, and I get to choose which one. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But I guess it's just a way of using up that last little slot if you don't have anything else. I mean, it's working out for me right now. I can choose something that'll actually have a bonus.
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea is that you choose now what sort of thing you're going to benefit in during the game. And as long as you've declared that now, then if you tell me, hey, I'm going to roll to see if I can jury-rig this engine back together, and I'm going to roll on my profession of, mechanic or whatever, then that's fair.
Yeah. All right, so let's go with profession. We'll do that. That was good. Suggestion, and it will be for wisdom, and I will go with maintenance worker.
Sounds good. So that's an effective +5 whenever you roll on that. So that's not bad.
Wow. Should I put that? Yeah, I'll put that here, not under. All right. It's a +5.
Because that's right. That's just to spell it out. That's the +3 because it is a class skill. It's a +1 because your wisdom ability. And it's +1 because you just now put a rank into it. So that's 5.
Okay. Well, that's actually very useful. That's actually really good. Yeah. So I can see why they did that too. See, they're knocking back all of my criticisms. That's good.
That's good. That's good. Yeah.
It's good since we're running through it. It's good to see how it's laid out.
Absolutely.
Or why it's laid out the way it is. But I can tell you it doesn't read this way.
I agree with you.
Reading it straight up.
I agree with you. You get more.
What are we
you
up
get
to?
More stuff.
As oh, a, I get more?
As a mechanic, you have proficiencies. So you're proficient with light armor, which means that that's not never going to slow you down or anything like that. And you're proficient with basic melee weapons, grenades, and small arms.
Small arms. Very nice. So I can use pistols and such, and I can throw grenades, and I can hit people with sticks. Very nice. By being a mechanic, at first level, you construct an artificial intelligence, a sophisticated program of self-motivated code that you can access for help in a variety of endeavors. This AI is the product of your own genius, far more advanced and complicated than any available for sale to consumers, though it falls short of being truly self-aware. And only you know the secrets of its creation and operation. Your AI can take on one of two forms, a drone or an exocortex. Don't know what that is. You must pick one of these forms on taking your first level of mechanic. And once this choice is made, it cannot be changed.
So these are your feats. These are the feats that you get with, or I guess they're class features technically, but I think they're feats. So your artificial intelligence can take the form of a physical drone that can follow you around and do stuff, like a little R2-D2. Your exocortex is basically a cyber jack in at the base of your skull or something, and it's basically a CPU for your brain. You can offload jobs onto it and have it figure stuff out for you. And as you gain levels, your exocortex will be able to do more and cooler stuff. Like maybe it'll help you hack into stuff or whatever.
I think I'll go with a drone. So you think I should put this under feats, probably?
I'm pretty sure that these are considered feats, yeah. Because they have the notation EX. That's an extraordinary ability. So I'm pretty sure that's a feat, technically speaking.
Bypass, you are skilled at getting inside computer systems. Oh, so I can hack.
Well, that means that you get it looks like you get a +1 bonus to computer skill checks. Now, to me, that says to put a rank. I mean, is that how you're reading it, to put a rank into your computer skill?
No, not necessarily, because, again, it could be something that happens outside of, you can't go any further, but there is a computer display there. You're going to have to try to get through it, and it's like, oh, okay. Well, I have a little bit of knowledge because I'm a mechanic, but it doesn't necessarily mean that I've been – trained in it. I wouldn't necessarily think I get a rank in it. Just as you say, I have some training.
Yeah. Okay. So write that down somewhere, though, like so that we remember to.
Yeah, I have that.
Yeah. Okay.
This one, computer skill checks. And the last one was custom rig. You've created a customized toolkit and used to hack systems and items. custom rig. Boy, that really sounds like, if you get that, if that's something you automatically have, it really does sound like you should be an expert in computers.
It is a funny, it's a funny overlap. Like, mechanic doesn't say to me computer expert, but I guess in this world, that's what it means.
Probably in this future time, there are no machines virtually that aren't computerized.
Yeah.
Let's see. Configured to take an upgrade slot on your armor, or can be installed in cybernetic augmentation. Okay, I have all this stuff. But what's it do? More information on. I could put have an augmentation. All right. Well, using this rig, you always count as having the appropriate tool or basic kit for any computers or engineering skill check you attempt. That's not bad. Some mechanic tricks and drone mods require the use of a custom rig. In addition, you can use your custom rig as Mark 1 comm unit. Finally, if you have it, well, that's nice too. If I don't have a, if I don't specifically say I have a comm, I always have one because I have my rig. Yeah. So that's not bad.
Yeah.
Finally, if you have a drone, you can use your custom rig to communicate over an encrypted channel with your drone, issue commands to its AI, or directly controlled. So I have a, you know, a trained dog basically.
Yeah.
That I can control.
And you can go as far down the rabbit hole as you want with the drone. I mean, probably not right this moment, but
no,
you know,
but
on page 74, there are all kinds of, you can basically build your own drone. They give you a chassis, and you can choose whether it's a hover drone or a stealth drone or a combat drone.
Yeah.
And you can pick options.
And that drone will have turns. It has its own speed and AC and saving throws and everything.
You're sort of a ranger. You're a computer ranger. You know, you have your familiar at the first level, and they're going to, or your companion rather, and they're gonna act on your turn. So.
Yeah. Well, that is not what I think of in terms of a mechanic, but there are archetypes like that in various movies and stories and stuff. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. That's cool. I'll just
You can theme it any way you want. You know, if you want it to be, like I said, like an R2-D2 or something, then that can be what it is. If you want it to be something super cool and like a little tank, then that could be what it is.
Yeah.
It's really up to you.
Yeah. I won't worry about that right now. I have it.
One more thing about the mechanic.
Okay.
And that is up at the top of page 69. First, you get your class level is 1. So we go across there, and you see that you have 0 base attack bonus, which just means that when you're in battle, you don't get any special extras yet.
Yeah.
You'll get more as you level up. And then you also get a +2 on your fortitude and reflex saves and a +0 on your will saves. So I guess we might as well go ahead and resolve your saving throw values.
Yeah,
right now.
Yeah, let's do that.
Fortitude is your saving throw, and it is based on your constitution.
Yes.
Automatically, you have a -2 on your fort saves. The good news is that you have a +2 because of what we just read. So that cancels out the -2 from your constitution.
Okay.
So you've got 0 on your fortitude.
Okay.
But it's worth noting that because, of course, as you level up, that will get better and better.
My total is 0. My base save is -2. No, or is that my ability mod?
Your base is 2, which you just got just now. And your mod, modified is a -2 from your ability score.
Is -2. Okay.
And that's why your total
and
is 0.
We don't have any miscellaneous.
Correct.
Okay, my total is 0. Okay. All right, that's
Reflex,
cool.
On the other hand, is based on dex. We know that your dex is very good.
Yes.
So your mod on that is 2. You get a +2 right now for free for being a mechanic, making your total reflex save a 5.
5. So I had my base save is 3, right? Because I have a +3 on that.
Your modified is 3 because that comes from your ability score. So your
ability mod. That's right. Yeah.
They're pretty consistent with that
term.
That's one term that they're actually consistent with. Modified means.
Okay.
You know, your ability modifier.
Okay.
Your base is a
+2. And
base
save is
from this.
Is a +2.
Yeah, from being a mechanic.
So a total of 5. Okay. And will.
Will is based on wisdom. You have a pretty good modifier on that, if you'll recall. You have 1 modifier on your wisdom.
Yes.
You don't get anything on your will save for being a mechanic, but that still means that you've got a +1 to will any time you have to roll against that.
Okay.
So that's good. And I think that's everything for your class. Class is kind of a big one, I guess. It's got a lot of fiddly bits.
Sure does.
So next in the rule book is to, quote, finalize ability scores, which of course is what we skipped ahead on that and did that at the very beginning.
Yeah, I think that's the basics.
Yeah, we're done.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
So we'll skip over that, and then we'll go to step 7, which is assign skill ranks and choose feats. So we kind of started this already when we saw that your class came with a certain number of skills and so on. but we both made a note to ourselves to remember that I think it was because you were human, you get a plus one on any skill, an extra plus one.
Yes.
And then also a plus one of feat. Yes. So we'll look at the feats in a minute, but you want to assign another skill to yourself?
Oh, I thought that plus one was the bonus to a skill that I've chosen, not that I get an extra skill.
Oh, okay.
Or did I read that incorrectly?
No, you could be right. Probably look it up. Let's see. It says, humans gain an additional skill rank at first level and each level thereafter. So no, you just get a free, you get a free rank to assign to any, to anything.
To any skill. Yet. So I could have another skill or I could boost one that I already
Correct.
Have.
So just in case you're keeping count, that this means that the ranks per level that you will, whenever you level up, you'll have three ranks that you can assign to any, to your skills, because you'll have,
yes.
you'll have technically four, but then plus your intelligence modifier, which was -2, and then plus one for being human. So that's three every time you level up.
Okay. I think I will put one in computers.
Yeah, I think that's actually a good idea, because it seems like that's kind of the way that you're going, kind of whether you like it or not. The mechanic is a computer person.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it seems, they seem to assume that you're going to have it. I mean, it's not explicit, but that's an impression.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
I mean, it's not going to be a bad skill to have, obviously, in a sci-fi universe.
No, obviously.
It's not,
yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
So right now, as far as I can tell, and correct me if I'm wrong, I have piloting, and that's, of course, my best skill.
Yep.
I have profession, specifically maintenance
yep.
worker, and I have computers with a skill rank of 1. However, computers are a
class skill.
They are a class
yep.
skill. So I get plus 3 on that, correct?
Correct.
So that's actually, it's a skill rank of 4, but I get a plus 3 bonus on it. Is that how that works?
It would mean that you have a skill rank of 1 in that.
Yep.
And then plus 3 on top of that. Is that what you were saying? So that's 4
yes,
total.
Yes, that's
4. Oh, okay. Now, by my math, effectively, that's going to be a plus 2, actually, because you're going to have to add your intelligence bonus to any roll that you make on that.
That's true.
Which is a -2,
yeah.
but that's fine. I mean, that's just,
yep.
you know, that'll, that's a choice you made.
Well, I'll write it down. Yeah, I'll put my total there. So I'm a little confused about my piloting. I would think my piloting would be higher. I
have 7 for your piloting.
For my piloting?
Total on your piloting is 7, yeah. It's plus 3 for being...
Because it's plus
yeah.
4, yeah.
Yep.
It's
not too shabby.
I was a little slow and I didn't mark it down.
That's almost a 50...
No,
what
mean,
is that? Like a
first level.
Not a 50%
yeah.
chance, but... Something really high. It's like a 40% or 30%. Yeah, 30% chance, right, of succeeding. Something like that.
You know, so I'll do a die roll and then
yeah,
throw
exactly,
it in,
correct.
So.
Yeah. Now you need to choose a feat, and I think our note said that you get an extra feat. Yeah, so you're gonna have actually. So
yeah.
How many feats do you get normally? I wonder. Hold on. The number of ranks. Blah blah blah. I'm on 16 under assign skill ranks and choose feats, and it says most characters begin play with 1 feat. Though humans gain a racial bonus feat. So you're starting with 2 feats.
Okay.
Now, feats are listed, and this is, I mean, feats, I could be wrong, but, oh, I am wrong. Okay, in Pathfinder, feats, I think, again, I could be wrong, but I think it fills, like, I don't know, 25% of the book. There's just so many feats. I guess this is still a new system, so they haven't quite gone overboard yet. But, yeah, so you have feats on page 152. There's a bunch of different ones. I don't think... It would make sense really to go through all of them. So I don't know
no,
if you want
no,
to kind of
no.
scan over them or something.
Well, I mean, we know what kind of character I'm after, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Now I could, you know, I could try to spread it out and make, I mean, just for people listening, there are different philosophies about when you have this many options and, you know, so many skills and minor skills, like a feat, I guess, would be a minor skill or a talent of
yeah.
some sort.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
when you have all of these different things, there are different approaches. And one is to try to make a character who's as adaptable to the situation as they possibly can. That's a generalist. And generally, they can try to do almost anything, especially when they have so many options available. When you're done, you have a character that if there's a fight, they can fight pretty well. If there's a technical problem, they can solve a technical problem. If there's some specific thing like medical or piloting or something, they might be able to give it a shot. But they're never an expert in anything, usually. Or if they are, they're not as good as somebody else might be. And the other approach is to make a specialist who more or less centers around one particular thing. And in my case, it's piloting and technology. That's what I'm going for with this particular character. He's not much good in anything else, but in those things, he's really good. So that's just so people understand when we're talking about knowing what I'm after and what I'm trying to create with this character, that's my philosophy or my approach.
Yeah, and I think that's it's worth thinking about. You could just go after one very specific thing, or you could choose deliberately a feat that just makes basically no sense for that character, but maybe it's something that they've had practice in, you know, in other areas of their life.
Oh, and there's another page. Okay, let's see. Maybe small arm proficiency, because that's one of the things that I get. I have proficiency in basic. Well, I already have it, though, right?
You already have it. I was going to say.
Yeah, it doesn't get better yet.
I don't think so. I mean, we could check. What you might prefer to do is do strike back, which is, it gives you a base attack bonus of +1, which means that any melee attack that you make will have a +1 on it. That would be sort of related, I guess. I mean, if you're going after something for combat, in other words.
Well, some of these really seem redundant, though.
Yeah, totally.
Weapon focus and weapon specialization.
And I think they're here because, like you said, you know, some people are building some very specific character, and maybe they want a feat, you know, to really boost something, or they don't have anything in this thing, so they want a feat just to give them some bonus in something that otherwise they just shouldn't really be able to do.
Okay, here's a couple of choices that seem very interesting. Sky Jockey, piloting 5 ranks is a prerequisite. Do I have piloting 5? That's a rank.
You do.
Right?
Oh, but wait, that's ranks. Yeah, that's no, you don't have 5 ranks. Okay. So essentially, you're going to have to be, yeah.
I can't get that that's until later, gonna... effectively.
No. Yeah.
Okay. Well, the next one up, skill synergy. There are no prerequisites, and you gain 2 new class skills or a +2 insight bonus to those skills.
Ooh, nice. Okay.
Why wouldn't anybody take that? Everybody should take that. You get 2 more classes, 2 more skills.
I would take it, but, you know,
okay,
whatever.
So,
some people are very focused.
2 more class skills. I got my list of class skills right here, so I can take engineering, and why not some medicine?
Ooh, nice. Yeah,
somebody's
going to
get
one.
Hurt. So,
that's a really
so
good
I assume
idea.
I have a skill rank of 1 in those now.
For a 2 bonus in both, because they both have a -2 ability modifier.
Yes.
Because they're both intelligence-based. But since they're class skills, you've taken a rank, free +3 that you get, so 4 minus 2 is 2.
2 on that. I should mark down that this is my feat. This 1 feat.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there is a space on the character
sheet. And I got how many feats for being a... The number of feats I get are based on my class or my... I know I get a bonus for being human, but or is it just your level?
I think that all I would want to say about that right now is that you get 1 free feat when you make a first level character.
All right, so...
I think different classes gain more feats at different rates.
Okay.
So, but it's a given that everyone's going to start with at least 1 feat.
And I have 2 because I'm human.
So you do have another to choose from then, right?
I still have a second one. I still have a second one to choose from, yeah. So let me first write that down. Skill synergy. That seems overpowered. I'm not complaining. Synergy.
As you yourself said at one point, I don't remember when, but you said like... a lot in this game is geared towards making sure that your character stays alive.
Yeah.
And that's just modern RPG. I'm
the first one to say that, you know, that's probably the most important thing. You know, I had so many.
Yeah.
There's no reason not to.
Well, especially
just as an aside, in the old days, there was this perception that it was the game master's job to challenge you. It was your job. You know, he's going to present puzzles and he's going to. You know, he or she are going to present puzzles. They're going to show you, you know, an adventure that it's your job to get around. It's not their job to keep you alive, and it's not their job to tell a story or any of that. And that entire philosophy is altered, as it should have, because in the old days, you know, it was very easy to create a system where it was effectively impossible for your players to ever win, to ever complete a challenge. And I think this is an improvement. I'm complaining a great deal. I'm grumbling because I'm an old man who grumbles, but this is a tremendous improvement just for that reason alone.
Here's something. Nope. Sorry. Never mind. There's a bunch of prerequisites.
Let's see. I don't have that. All right. That would be cool though. Pull the pin. Perform a disarm to activate a foe's grenade. It's that famous movie bit where, you know, you're fighting the guy and, you know, and he knocks you down and he's like,
yeah, absolutely.
And then you have the rings in your finger, and he's like, and he blows up, you know, like five grenades blow up 2 feet away from you and you're still fine.
Why aren't you
it has a prerequisite. It's fun. That would be a good one. We'll go with fleet. Increase your base speed. Doesn't say by how much.
Let's look that up in
fleet some page. On page 157.
Fleet.
Top right hand. Faster than most. Benefit while wearing lighter, no armor.
Yeah.
And speed increases by 10 feet. That's pretty good, because I have a...
And I believe humans start at 30, right?
Yeah, movement and position, page 255.
Speed, yeah. Your speed is... I mean, I know it starts at 30 feet.
Creatures land...
I'm just always curious as to where they actually rank.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like medium creatures have a land speed of 30 feet. Yeah, 6 squares.
All right, so I have 40 feet.
Cool. So you've got speed 40 feet, yeah.
Yeah, if I'm wearing no or light armor, and I have a proficiency in light armor, so...
Yeah, it's always good because, I mean, not all, depends on what you're fighting, but a lot of your enemies are going to be 30 feet speed, so it's nice to have that 10-foot advantage on their movement.
Okay, so that's pretty good.
For some reason, they have buying equipment next. I want to kind of, before we do that, I feel like it makes more sense for us to resolve the resolve points, and that's step 9 under finishing details, but I figure let's go ahead and get the resolve points out of the way. So it says your character can use resolve points for important purposes, including replenishing your stamina points. You spend 1 resolve and you can get all your stamina points back. And there are also some features, some places that you can spend a resolve point to do something really special. At first level, your character has a number of resolve points equal to 1 plus the ability score modifier of her class's key ability score. Your key ability is Dex, so this is 1 plus your Dex mod, which
plus 3
is 3, so that's 4 total. Yeah, so you have 4 resolve points, so you can write that down.
I didn't understand about resolve is how do those replenish, or do they replenish?
They do replenish after a full 8 hours of rest.
Okay, right.
There might be some conditions where that's not true, but the weird thing about resolve for me is that you have to spend, like... I mean, basically, you would never want to be in a situation where you have 0 resolve points gone, because then if you get hit enough, then you just basically die immediately. So essentially, like, for all practical purposes, you are never, you never have all the resolve points that you think you have. I don't know. It's a little bit weird.
It is overly complicated. I would have, anyway, doesn't matter what I would do. It's not my game. Okay.
I mean, it's funny because, I mean, the stamina points I really like. I really like the stamina mechanic. It's just the resolve one I feel a little bit funny about.
I think resolve is like, you know, the hero's been, you know, beaten to the ground and he, you know, his willpower is
how can they possibly
to drag him
it's very,
very
movie
centric.
you just will yourself to survive somehow.
And personally, I wouldn't have gone the route they went. I would have made that based on something like wisdom, maybe willpower, and you know, like
really
the modifier
idea,
whatever your modifier for wisdom, that's where your resolve would go in. And, you know,
but that forces people, you know, that then makes that one stat super important no matter what.
Yeah, yeah. And there are other, you know, other types of things like charisma. As I say, I put my worst number in there because it's never, you know, outside of the occasional time when you have to impress somebody, it has almost no value in the game. There have to be ways to make that an important statistic because it's important in everyday life. So why don't we have that reflected in the game? And I don't know, maybe this game does it very well and I just haven't run into it yet.
For certain players, it will. Like if you were an envoy instead of a mechanic, definitely want charisma super high. I mean, I think that's their key ability. So there are some places where that happens.
Okay, fair enough.
So now you can buy equipment. And I do think that this is kind of worth just maybe touching on, because I mean there's a lot of equipment and stuff, but this is one of those things that a lot of people kind of forget about or don't understand in RPG, and that is that generally in a rule book, not all the time, sometimes a GM just says, yeah, whatever you have, I won't question it. In these kinds of games, they have a section in the core rule book, and then certainly at least with Starfinder and Pathfinder, there are whole other books that you can buy just of equipment. So in Starfinder, you start flat with 1,000 credits. That's just no matter who you are, what you are, you start with 1,000, which means that you can look through the equipment section, which pretty much starts on page 171, like realistically.
Okay.
And there's some melee weapons. There are some small arms on 173. And yeah. I think your choices are going to be, and there's armor too, because you're proficient in armor, so you'll probably want to look at that. Oh, and grenades.
Just for the sake of this episode, I will buy weapons. I won't buy any of the other stuff because they're going to be listening to me shopping at Walmart.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but we'll buy weapons just to see how it works, just to see how it goes. So, right. So I have 1,000 credits.
1,000 credits. In other games, like in D&D and even Pathfinder, I think you can first roll. You can choose to roll for your gold pieces in hopes of getting above average, or you can choose an average amount that they give you in the book. But in this, they just say, "Hey, you got 1,000 credits." So that's that.
In old school D&D. The amount of gold you started with was based on your class. Fighters always started with more, and it was a die roll. And fighters always started with more, but their equipment was more expensive, so they had to have more money to start.
Right.
Otherwise, they couldn't have swords or armor or anything like that. So, and wizards got almost nothing. They had very little money to start.
Yeah. And they didn't have a whole lot of health points either, so there you go.
No. Oh, that was really bad.
You had to really like magic.
You had to be lucky. You simply had to be lucky in the early days. And you always hung back. You were always way, way, way in the back. And that meant you always had something like magic missile or some kind of attack magic.
Ranged
Everybody
attack.
Had it because they weren't going to be doing anything else. That's all they could do was fight from behind. Yeah, I mean, the structure of the game dictated how you played the game in a lot of ways. And this, in large part, this has changed much of that. The ability to, I mean, in this game, I mean, we haven't brought it up yet, but this game has extensive magic rules so that you could have a game system, you know, a space opera game in the future that has magic in it. It has a character class that's very similar to a Jedi, and you could do your own version of Star Wars with this game. And you're,
Which is cool. I think that flexibility is really, really neat.
I agree. However, I think those should have been supplements, not in the base book, because I think it's way too much to be thrown at.
Yeah,
but that's just that's a personal taste thing. But at any rate, let me buy some guns. I want some guns. First off, basic melee weapon. Oh, some of these are expensive. Good grief.
Yeah, okay. I think you have a choice between... Realistically, well, no, it looks like there's some knives in there that you could choose from.
Tactical baton. A knife is probably more useful. We'll go with a survival knife, all right?
Okay, that's 95 minus... credits. Yeah, I should probably mention, so equipment, and you can keep writing, but equipment generally goes into two places. One is on an equipment list on your character sheet, and then if it's a weapon, there's a space on the character sheet to kind of spec out the weapon and kind of say what level weapon it is, what kind of attack bonus, if anything, it gets, what kind of damage it deals. Sometimes there are two entries with weapons, and the reason for that is because you might have a weapon on your person but not in your hand. So you want to have it, you want to represent it both places.
Weapon levels, or even item levels in general, you have to be that level in whatever class you are? No.
Nope. Okay. So the weapon level... Actually, I hate that they used the term level for this. It actually just represents sort of really the quality. You might have even called it quality instead of level of the weapon. So you can use whatever level weapon you want. Now, what you can afford is a completely different story, and that is reflected in...
Of course, yeah.
So there is a little bit of control there. But yeah, and sometimes there are add-ons to weapons, like little... You know, chips that you can put on your weapon to enhance their power.
Yeah.
And those
will
have constraints as to what level of weapon it is compatible with.
Yeah.
So that's where that comes into play.
Many weapons can be enchanted if you're using magic in the game. I noticed that. And that can really buff your weapon quite a bit. Rather than another weapon, why don't I go with armor and see how armor affects my armor class?
Oh, that's a great idea. Yeah. Yeah. Let's do that. So that's on page 197, it looks like.
Freebooter armor, expensive, but it gives me a +2 energy and a +3 kinetic. That's pretty nice.
Yeah, and we should probably mention that really, really quick. So the energy AC and the kinetic AC are the two different types of armor in Starfinder, and this is pretty specific to this system.
Actually, before we... I don't mean to interrupt, but before we go into that, let me buy that particular armor, and we'll go over it directly as I'm modifying my armor.
Oh, yeah. That makes, yeah. Let's, yep.
Okay, so I am buying, what did I just say? Freebooter Armor 1.
Freebooter 1.
And yes. That's a level 2. Okay, so Freebooter Armor 1. Say that 5 times fast. Bulk is just a reflection of how much stuff you can carry at any one time. And there are specific rules for that, I noticed, but won't go into those, I don't imagine. Doesn't really come into anything until you're trying to move everything at once. Okay, so I have my Freebooter Armor 1, and we'll go back up to armor class, and we'll start talking some armor. Okay, so my Freebooter Armor 1 gives me a +2 energy attack thing. See, I don't know what this is for.
Armor class.
Armor class, of course, yeah. Energy armor class and kinetic armor class, of course. Energy is getting zapped with a laser, getting hit with electricity, etc. Kinetic is getting stabbed, slashed, punched, etc. Shot as well. So a shot specifically with a, you know, a bullet or something that delivers a kinetic payload. I do get an armor bonus, and I assume that's where I put my bonus, right? Yeah, because it says bonus. All right, so I do +2 on energy, and I do +3 on kinetic. I'm just starting off with those bonuses from my armor, but let's go through it because there are dex modifiers and other, it looks like miscellaneous modifiers as well. So we'll start off, it seems like we start with a plus, we start with a 10 plus our armor bonus. Okay, so I'm up to 12. I have a dex modifier. Now, how do they determine the
That is always, modifier. When they say modifier, they're very consistently talking about your ability modifier.
Oh, all right. So I have a +3 on that. Miscellaneous might be from magic. It might be from, like bionics or, you know, cybernetics of some sort. Yeah, okay. So none of that applies. So I have a total of +5. So my total is 15.
Yeah, which that's really good to be able to avoid a laser shot. That's nice. Especially for first level, I feel.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's not bad. With my armor and without it, I'm still at 13, which is pretty good. So now for the kinetic, it's even better because I'm getting +3 for my armor for kinetic attack and +3 for my dex, which is a 16 total. So that's actually very nice. That's very nice. Now, here's something I don't get. My armor class versus combat maneuvers.
Yeah, so combat maneuvers is when, honestly, I don't know anyone who actually uses this rule, but it is there, and it's if you want to, like, grapple someone and hold them in place, or maybe drag them over to a precipice and throw them off the side or something. When you're defending against that, this is the number that they have to beat in order to successfully, you know, grapple you.
Okay. So, just to write it down and have it there, my dex modifier for that is +3. My armor bonus is my kinetic armor class. Really? The armor class itself?
Well, no, I mean the total kinetic, which is 16.
Yeah, the total kinetic, which is 16, plus 8.
So you're 20...
+3.
So 24 or something like that.
That's another thing that I'm not used to. Numbers going way past 20.
Yeah, isn't it weird? Yeah, it really is.
Yeah,
it's very really strange. Unsettling.
The numbers add up. They do. I know they all add up.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
24 of 27. Yeah, a total of 27. Wow. Because that was simply impossible in the old days.
Yeah, yeah. No, because it wouldn't calculate.
It's crazy. But there were horrible compromises made as well, you know, like for, you know, human strength, humans can only be, you know, they can only go up to a strength of 18. Well, but some are stronger than others. So, you know, that now we have a percent dice. Yeah, 1830 and 1850 and 18 00. Whoa, the strongest a human could I mean, it was stupid. It was ridiculous. Below these is that DR? What is that? What does that refer to?
That is damage resistance.
Okay.
I'm thinking that you don't have anything special for DR or resistance because I feel like that would be more if you were an alien who maybe came from a planet of acid, you would be resistant to acid as something that would, you know, so yeah, as a human, I feel like you're probably just kind of run of the mill.
All right. We'll just leave it at that. That's fine. All right. So armor class actually is, I have to tell you, I really like what they did with armor class. I really do. It's so much better.
It
makes a lot
would.
More sense. Yeah, it's so, so much better. And you can get, you know, right into the detail, energy versus kinetic.
And it does. It solves that problem of well, you know, you shoot someone with a gun, they fall over. Why wouldn't that happen here? And we've got a little bit of that now. We can say, well, it's, you know, some sci-fi magic stuff, but it's like, you know, energy AC versus KAC, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, I've never played this game, you know, even though I have the rule book where, you know, this is all new to me. But I used to play a lot of Traveler, and one of the armor types that Traveler used to have was it was a type of armor called Reflect. And Reflect was a mirror surface that you could put on almost any other kind of hard armor.
Nice.
And you'd spray it on, you know, essentially, or have it applied, yeah, you know, at a armorers or something like that. And that specifically was good against lasers. It was specifically against lasers. And if you had good Reflect on your armor, you know, you might be shot up with regular bullets, but they could almost never touch you with a laser when you had good Reflect. And this is a way of expressing that. If they had an armor like that, and there probably is one in there, if I looked closely enough, there probably is one very similar to that. It would give you an EAC that was very, very high, a great bonus for your EAC, but maybe almost nothing for KAC, because that's not what it's for. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I really do like that.
There is actually one more thing that we should probably just at least have you choose.
Okay.
And that is alignment.
Yeah.
You know all the alignments.
Yes, I know of the alignments. Yes.
And I think this could probably be a completely separate episode if we were to actually try to explain what they all were, which we won't do here. So did you want to choose one?
I will probably just go with, we'll go with chaotic neutral. That's always been a fun one. You know, chaotic neutral characters are kind of, maybe kind of the Han Solo type, maybe. I don't know.
I think there's an argument there, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, everybody has their own interpretation. I've read so many descriptions, people's opinions about what alignments actually refer to. Just very, very briefly for listeners, alignment in classic Dungeons & Dragons, an alignment was a reflection of your spiritual condition regarding what you consider to be good and what versus bad, or what you consider to be chaotic versus order, right? And it's this chart of 9 different alignments that kind of they all dance between order and chaos and good and evil. In D&D, it's extremely important to know what your alignment is, extremely, because you're running into monsters that may or may not hurt you based on your alignment. You're running into magic items.
Or magic, too.
Yeah, magic items that you can only use if you're a certain alignment and things like that. And essentially, if you're a good person and you believe in law and order, then you're lawful good. It's that simple. And if you're a despicable person that believes in absolute freedom and nobody should ever tell you what to do and you're going to do whatever you want to do to anybody at any time, you're chaotic evil. And those are considered the two extremes. So in Starfinder, it may or may not have any value, the alignment.
Yeah, I think it would depend on the game, on what kind of adventure you were going through.
If you are running one with magic or maybe those Jedi-like characters, probably it has a very important, you know, it would more or less have the same role that it does in, you know, a fantasy setting. If you're doing one that's more hard science or more space opera, it's just a reflection of your philosophy in life, really. And there is a section for deity, if deity matters. And again, in a fantasy world, a high fantasy world, deities matter a great deal. In a world like this, it depends. Is there magic in this universe? If there is, then yeah, it matters. If it doesn't, then probably it's just a matter of your personal philosophy and, you know, your personal religious bent, which will have an effect on the character. But, you know, if there's no magic, you're not going to run into a magic item that's going to zap you and kill you if you're the wrong alignment or you believe in the wrong god. So I'll leave that blank for now. And all I need is a character name. I'm going to go with Harry Peter Rollins. And that's because his initials are HPR.
Nice. Very nice.
And that is him. That's my character. Now, if I was better acquainted with the rules and how all this worked, this would not take anywhere near as much time. I would know exactly what I had to do and what order I needed to do it in to make it most efficient. There is a real lot to like in this, but I don't know. I always feel like I can tweak things or should. So
I have the same problem because, I mean, obviously I like to write how-tos and tutorials on things. That's something that for whatever reason I really enjoy doing. And whenever I see a text, the first thing that my mind goes to is like, how could this have been expressed clearer? But hopefully that's what this episode is doing. I think that stepping through it really does make it congeal a little bit better.
I'm understanding it better, but I've been reading it. Right. I still haven't gone through the whole book yet, but I've been reading through the book. However, anyone listening to this episode, if they don't have the book in front of them, a lot of this isn't going to make an awful lot of sense. It just won't. And we're not following the order necessarily that they've expressed is the way to do it. But that's because we don't think the order makes any sense.
Right. But, I think that the takeaway from this episode, if I had to choose, would be the idea that in order to build a character, you have to sit down with the text and look things up. That's what it is. There's no magic to it. You don't just stare at the character sheet and put numbers in. You don't have to have someone hold your hand through it. You just look at the text and do what it says. And then, if you have to, maybe practice a couple of times. And sometimes, it's flipping back and forth. We've been all over this book already. Just to build this character. And there's an argument that, hey, it would be really cool if they could put all of the things in one place. And, but this rule book is also a reference book. And so I think that they're trying to do sort of double duty. Here's how to build the character. And oh, by the way, here's all the stuff that later, when you've already built your character, you're still going to want to refer to. We wanted that to be in a logical order. So it does a lot of things, but I think the takeaway is read the rule book of whatever game system you're building for and follow the steps. Probably worth just sort of noting that if people don't think that this sounds like fun, look at another system. There's other systems that are a lot simpler where you can roll up a character in literally 5 or 10 minutes and then start playing. So it's not like this is the only way to do it. This is just one way.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.